When someone says the name Moses, many people picture Charlton Heston standing atop a mountain carrying a stone set of tablets. We've all heard the stories of him facing off with Pharaoh saying, "Let my people go," and the parting of the Red Sea. Today you're going to find out why this misfit, Moses, was anything but the person you thought you knew. Welcome, everybody, to Skywatch Television. I'm Joe Horn. We are in the midst of a very exciting series on the new book, Misfits. And if you missed last week, you've got to go back to the archives and check it out, because we explain the title of this book, the subtitle, the cover, the cartoonage that you're seeing, and why Tom Horn of Defender Publishing decided to put it out. But let me just have the guys once again put this cover up on the screen, and I'm going to read you the subtitle. It's Learning from Our Inner Outcast and How It Can Empower Us to Find Our Destiny. Mm-hmm. So this is one of those, as I stated last week, a classic case of do not judge a book by its cover. It has this holiday furnishing. But the book is actually very much a very serious book on evangelism, mistakes that the church make by disincentivizing people to come back, how conversions end up very short-lived. It has spirituality, spiritual warfare. Mm-hmm. It's a very, very deep book. This week, I want to introduce the authors and then hit the ground running directly into the meat of the book. First, she's a credentialed ordained reverend with a degree in Bible and theology, a powerful voice in Christian television, Donna Howell. She's a credentialed private investigator that oversees the research arm of Skywatch TV and Defender Publishing, Allie Henson. And she's the visionary behind the nonprofit organization Whispering Ponies Ranch, Nita Horn. Welcome back, ladies. It's so good to have you. Donna, let's dive right in. We have so much ground to cover today. This idea that so many people have about Moses, as I mentioned in the onset, you know, that he was a baby in a basket, that he survived the white water rapids of the Nile. Is this not an accurate depiction of
not
what
at all.
Moses like? Because you're about to like blow people's brains here.
Right. Here's the thing about Moses. This is what I love. Okay. All of the word is right for training us in righteousness, our ability to learn from the characters. But I have this pet peeve, and I call it Xerox theology. So you take a copy, right? You
okay.
take a copy of an image, then take a copy of the copy, then take a copy of a copy, several copies later,
sure.
you've lost the original image.
And one day you end up with baby Jesus surviving the white water rapids, right?
This idea, okay, Xerox theology, that's how I coin it. It's this idea that we've gotten so far removed from what's actually said, and not in English, but in the original languages. You have several Bible translations happening later, and you don't really connect with the true biblical Moses anymore. So people see the No Offense Against DreamWorks, Prince of Egypt. It's a beautiful film, but that's the idea we have, that mm-hmm. these whitewater rapids are crashing, and he bumped into an alligator, and here comes a stone. And by the way, the whole idea, like half of the cartoons out there about Moses, there's not even a lid on the basket. So major oversight, Jochebed. Moses' mother, right?
Yeah.
Major, he's dead 10 feet in. No. Okay.
A blankie should do just fine.
And his sister running behind, trying to keep up.
Yeah. Yeah. You got Miriam over there totally like announcing to every crocodile on the Nile, I'm here. I'm looking at my, chilling out my brother. Here he goes.
But if I remember the movie right, the water was very gentle, so it works.
Oh, it's only gentle when Moses arrives at what becomes this weird little puddle with lily pads.
Yes.
Let me bring it home. First of all, you have to understand that this is not a random act of faith that Jochebed would have put Moses in the river to begin with. It starts off as a technicality because Jochebed was obeying Pharaoh's command that all of the baby boys be cast into the Nile River as per Exodus 1:22. So when she puts him in the river, that's actually technically in obedience to his law. Otherwise, you get to this moment where when he arrives at the Pharaoh's daughter, Bithia or Tharmuth, depending on the extra biblical texts, you get to this point where you go, you know what? Even though she's Pharaoh's daughter, if she would have picked up an Israelite baby and decided to disobey her father's law, that would be treason. The only way that she would have been allowed to adopt the baby is if there had been a technicality that he had been thrown into the Nile. It's not even a basket. It's actually the Hebrew word ark, same word as used in the Noah epic. Oh, so it's really beautiful, but also the idea that there's white water rapids and all of this going on. Okay, folks, Bithia or Tharmuth would never have bathed in the Nile. Not ever. That was saved for the common folk. Yet the Bible says that she was bathing and that her women were walking with her. This was a familial sacred ritual at the palace. In fact, in 1871, the Jameson Fawcett Brown Bible Commentary does go on to acknowledge that peculiar sacredness was attached to these portions of the Nile, which flowed near the temples. The water there was fenced off. Okay, fenced off as a protection from crocodiles. So in order for Jochebed, Moses' mother, to have ensured that Moses reached his destination, she would have had to have gently lowered him on the other side of a protection fence. Oh. He didn't go miles and miles down the rocky rapids. Now, why is this important? Yeah. We are supposed to be able to learn so much from these people. And we always say, God did this sensational beginning with Moses. Mm-hmm. I can't even relate to that. I can't even relate to what this, I mean, look at what he did with the baby in a basket. No, we have a very anointed mother who made a very beautiful decision. And I got to read you this excerpt really quickly. After we've visited the correct theology of the book, I say, and yet God's power and provision are still woven throughout this story, despite the fact that reality is a little less bang, pow, pizzazz as we've assumed. Just because the truth isn't accompanied by trumpet blasts and shooting stars doesn't make it a lesser truth. When a story involves an act of divine intervention, a supernatural intrusion of the hand of God that redirects circumstances and inspires people to move along the path he paves towards optimal endings, that doesn't go away just because the story is less sensational than the movie. In fact, it's more relatable. God made Moses, God led Jochebed to devise a plan, and then God ensured the successful delivery of that baby boy into the hands of a woman who was likely the only one who could have saved him the way that she did. This is the same Almighty who made you, misfits.
Wow, come on.
The next time that you're tempted to say, my story started off a bit rocky and dysfunctional, remember that you might have more in common with Moses than you thought.
Is that not amazing? This is what I mean when I say don't judge a book by its cover. We've furnished it in this holiday festivity, but it really is a serious book with a lot of dynamic, totally action-packed theology. Right. And what I'm hearing you say is that by creating this sensational Hollywood depiction, it's possible that the people writing these films that date back, you know, 30, 40 years never understood the proper premise in the first place because they're not Bible believers, they're making entertainment. But the point is, that story, when you talk about it that way, I feel like what we've done is we've actually diluted the majestic intervention of what God had ordained to happen because we have a cooler way of presenting it. We like this version, right?
Right.
Allie, what was Moses really? I mean, for the viewers at home, Hebrew, Egyptian, both?
Both and neither. Okay.
Okay.
He was born as a Hebrew, not supposed to be allowed to live. Then he was adopted by an Egyptian, but he needed a wet nurse. So he was sent back to live as a Hebrew until probably what was the age of five. So he was with the Hebrews living as a Hebrew back to Egypt in the castle or the place of the Pharaoh, whatever you want to call it, living there as an Egyptian, but aware that his brothers are outside who are the ones who are slaves, who are beaten, who are working without the supplies they need, who are toiling, you know. You know that the people in the palace who knew that he was actually a Hebrew, some of them had to resent him and wonder why he was there. Right. So when he's on the Hebrew side, it's, well, what would you know about our hardship? You get to live in the palace.
Right.
He's both, he's neither, he doesn't fit in anywhere. Mm-hmm. He's the prophesied deliverer, but he didn't know that when he was 10, or did he? Mm-hmm. The point is, we look back in hindsight and we go, well, yeah, God worked it all out. Isn't that great? Somebody who is a real person went through the daily ins and out of navigating this crazy world of being a misfit and had to surrender to let God use him in this amazing dynamic way that even 4,000 years later, we're still talking about. Right. So he was both, he was neither, he was a little bit of this, a little bit of that, and he didn't fit in anywhere, but then he was both. You're welcome.
And you know he cared. You know he cared when he was when he was in the palace, you know that he cared about his brothers and sisters on the outside, because when he was 40, he killed a slave driver in defense of his fellow man. So you know he cared. Every moment that his cup runneth over on the inside of the palace, there were screams of his brothers and sisters on the outside making bricks without straw. He cared. And he's sitting there probably facing on the other side of the table racial problems because somebody in there thought, he's slave blood. What's he doing in here?
Exactly.
Yeah. He was a total misfit. Never fit in anywhere.
So let's pivot gears. I want to get Nita in here. What is this slow of tongue thing about?
Well, Donna went into extensive research on the stuttering that we know of that Moses had, and I'm doing that right now, not purposefully. But having said that, I think I can relate a little bit to how he may have felt, because being not a Hebrew, not an Egyptian, and yet both, I'm sure that he and himself was conflicted, and probably in both worlds was made fun of because he had the stuttering problem. So I can imagine that no matter where he went, he had already developed a problem with public speaking, or even small talk, you know.
Self-confidence.
Just very much, you know, who am I to talk? I can't even form a sentence. And then can you imagine when God said, go talk to Pharaoh? In his mind, he's probably thinking this is something that would play out like, let my people go. That's not very authoritative, and I don't mean that as a negative.
No, that makes sense.
That's
though.
Just in my, because I have a speech impediment myself. Mm-hmm. I was born with a cleft palate, and so I grew up having to take speech therapy, and I know how self-conscious people who have issues with speech can feel.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And God has helped me to overcome a lot of mine, but I still say, here am I, send my kids. I do that every day. And so God is still working on me, and I'm still that, but I can relate to that. So I just think that there was so much more to his own hang-ups in himself that kept him from becoming the man who said a bunch of stuff, as opposed to the man that said, here am I, send my brother. And a side note real fast, when I was growing up, I did the same thing. My baby sister, a year and a half younger than me, spoke and told my mom and dad what I was trying to say because I couldn't speak clearly.
Yet the glory, the cool part that is in this book is how Moses, in spite of all of that, became the father of nations.
Yeah.
And this tells people that are watching these programs that you may have something that you're focused on, that you're embarrassed about, you feel like you've got limitations, whatever.
Right. You're not qualified.
But none of that. If God is for you, who can be against you?
That's right.
That is going to limit what you can become.
That's right.
Well, and like with Nita, she's being very humble. She says, Lord, send my kids. But you go to the ranch.
Yeah.
And you watch her interact with those leaders and those kids, and it's a different story. She's totally, totally got her wheelhouse, you know, where God has placed her as a misfit, if that makes sense. Tom, I want to remind the viewers at home, as well as the people here today, that we are offering with this book the largest giveaway of the year. So not only are you going to receive the book Misfits, but Tom, this book, The Christmas Classics, we talked about it briefly last week, but this book could have been published for its own release, and yet you decided to put it in with this package, and it has 14 Christmas classics. I'll just read just a couple. Why the Chimes Rang, The Shepherd's Story, A Christmas Carol. This book by itself, beautifully bound, could have been offered by itself, thrown into this package. Also, the book Ebenezer, The Final Years of Scrooge, which picks up right where the last Ebenezer Scrooge story left off. It's as if Charles Dickens wrote this sequel himself. This is by Donna Howell.
But in particular, from an even more kind of Christian world view.
Right.
A very redemptive kind of story, if you will.
But also in the package, the newest CD by yours truly, and we're not going to go over all the details, but in a previous life, music was very important to us. We used to headline in Portland, places just outside of Seattle we went to, just outside of Canada, and we're invited to, you know, headline Waterfront Blues Fest type events in Portland. I played with former members of the Steve Miller Band and with CeCe James, lead guitar player, for a long time, and put this out very robustly for your consumption in the package. The brand new 110 ebook collection with Kindles, PDFs, ebooks, all on a data library for you. And finally, from the archives, Teens Rock, the entire series. This was never aired on television. This was a whole series we did for youth. The perfect stocking stuffer for somebody in your family that's at that coming of age where they need good, solid biblical instruction. And again, Tom, none of these products, you know, last year's palette of recycled stuff. No. This is all brand new product, half of it being produced for specific use in this package. Right. So again, when you get this package, ladies and gentlemen, you're not getting leftovers or remainders. This is all very brand new, very exciting stuff.
Yeah, and Joe, of course, you know, it's the Christmas holiday gift-giving season.
Right.
So people who get this package, they can turn around, re-gift those to other people if they want to. Everybody's budget is really thin and getting worse, and we're not even going to talk about the Biden administration during these programs. But this makes it very easy for many people to be able to buy the book, get all this other stuff that they then can use during the holiday gift-giving season.
Right. We're going to show you how you can get this package. Don't go away.
With the holiday season here, it's crucial that we all remember the true reason for the season. Now you can uncover valuable truths about Christ's kingdom while awaiting His imminent return. Skywatch TV is proud to announce the largest holiday giveaway of the year, the Misfits Grand Giveaway. With so many in the body of Christ experiencing seasons of loneliness, insecurity, doubts about their God-given purpose, or feel like out-of-place misfits in the kingdom of God, the time for change is now. In their new book, Misfits, the ladies of Simply His delve into the vital spiritual realities and theological principles that demonstrate how these discouraging sentiments are not unique to you, but may in fact be indicators that you're on the verge of a spiritual breakthrough. In Misfits, you will learn surprisingly simple but life-changing biblical information that will empower you to discover your untapped potential, to find your God-ordained calling, and to embrace your destiny. Also included in this incredible holiday giveaway is Donna Howell's thrilling sequel to the Charles Dickens classic A Christmas Carol, entitled Ebenezer, where she answers what was left unaddressed at the end of the Dickens novel, such as, whatever becomes of Tiny Tim? And what happens when people from all over London witness the change in Ebenezer and learn that the motivation behind all of his transformation began with what they believed to be ghostly visitations? Ebenezer is an instant holiday classic. You'll also receive the never-before-released collection, Christmas Classics, a beautiful volume of 9 full books with 14 stories total, all celebrating Christmas. These classic narratives will warm your heart and inspire you this holiday season, featuring titles in their entirety like A Christmas Carol, The Shepherd's Story, The Shepherd Who Didn't Go, The Gift of the Magi, The Other Wise Man, and several more. But we're just getting started. You'll also receive the new Best of Defender Publishing ebook collection on DataDisc. Now, for the first time ever, this must-have assortment features 110 of the most information-packed best-selling books in Defender history. These full-length books are in popular ebook formats, so you can read them on Kindle, EPUB, PDF, and other handheld electronic devices. Give this collection as the ultimate gift to somebody you know this holiday season, or take them with you wherever you go. Valued at over $1,500 all by itself. You'll also receive directly from the Skywatch TV archive the complete Teens Rock collection on DVD. Join Joe Horn and his talented group of young panelists as they discuss important issues facing today's modern youth culture, featuring bonus interviews with musicians Alicia and Whitney as they perform their original songs, So Much More, and Try Kneeling. And finally, included in the Misfits Grand Giveaway, Joe Horn's new CD, This Time Around, an anthology over 20 years in the making, featuring the entire Horn family performing hit singles like Long Drive. Talk to Jesus.
So let your heart light on fire for the one true Messiah. Talk to Jesus. Yeah.
This time around.
This time around. Yeah. It's not about my spotted record. Crying about the man I want to be.
And so many more. Sold separately, these items hold a retail value of over $1,600. Yours now for your donation of only $35 plus shipping and handling. This is the largest giveaway of the year, just in time for the holiday gift-giving season, and is available only while supplies last. So don't delay. The Misfits Grand Giveaway, available now at SkywatchTVStore.com. Order now or call 1-844-750-4985.
Welcome back to Skywatch TV. I'm Joe Horn. We're in the midst of a series on the new book, Misfits. And of course, you just watched how you can take part in the largest giveaway of this holiday season and throughout the year with the new book. Donna, we've got so much to cover with just a few minutes left. I want to ask you, Moses, you know, everybody knows that he killed an Egyptian slave driver. And then he fled from the face of Pharaoh.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, but what is the political scandal here?
Okay, so again, you got to remember the misfitism that's happening here in this part in time in history. First of all, the Hammurabi's code was in effect in Egypt at that time. Scholars believe, and they have every reason to believe that. The Hammurabi's code included a law. It was the law of the land in Egypt, and it included a law that was very much life for a life. So if Moses would have killed an Egyptian, whether or not he was obligated on the Israel side to defend a brother, this would have been considered absolute life for life. He would have been cut down as the deliverer. So when he flees from the face of Pharaoh, first of all, you have everybody going, oh, he ran, he's guilty.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so on the Israel side, you also have one disgruntled Hebrew because Moses is out walking the next day after it happened and he sees one disgruntled Hebrew accuses him of murder. Okay, there's a couple of different words going on here. Naka is actually smite and Hagar is murder. It's interesting to note that when God, as author, capital A, is reflecting over what he has done, he says, smite the Egyptian, which is the same word, by the way, meaning that he beat him. So the murder itself was not necessarily intentional, although we read it that way. And then it's the disgruntled Hebrew the next day who accuses him of murder. So you have this political scandal going on. I want to point out just a couple of really quick amazing things. First of all, the motive is absolutely clear. Acts 7:23 through 25 states that Moses, as a deliverer, was defending the oppressed, making his motive a righteous one. So this was not any kind of a premeditated murder, even though some scholars go there and it's totally unfair. But because he was accused of murder by the Hebrew and also by his own people under the effect of the Hammurabi's code at the time, you literally have the deliverer of Israel. Imagine the day that he kills a man. They think it's murder, and then he flees. He kills, and then he flees. Courageously, he runs away. Imagine the scandal here.
Okay.
But there's one thing that we don't even think about, we don't ever teach. It's called the clause of the Dinro death, and it was part of the Noahide law. So as far back as Adam and Eve, you know that there had to have been a pre-Mosaic moral code of some kind, because the existence of sin and being able to put down the idea of sin in the Old Testament pre-Mosaic law automatically assumes that they were following a moral code of some kind.
Right.
Scholars believe that this was, according to the oldest Talmudic Jewish traditions, called the Noahide Law. And in that law, it not only recognizes that Moses is allowed to defend his brother in the way that he did, it actually holds him criminally negligible if he doesn't. So he had to, according to what scholars believe is every single Israel law at the time, he had to do what he did. And he did it as the deliverer of Israel. Now, I want to say, this is the moment that counts. He kills and he runs. Whether or not he had all kinds of endorsement in hindsight, people see him and they go, oh my goodness, this is the man who is getting ready in a few years to deliver thou shalt not kill, written by the finger of God, right. And he killed a guy.
Right.
He murdered and he ran. This is the coward Moses that people see. What did he go on to do? Okay, I'm going to read you a real quick list here. He escaped genocide, first of all. He conversed with a burning bush that never burned up. He turned a staff into a serpent and back again. He took leprosy on his own flesh and healed it in an instant. He turned water into blood twice. So if you're sitting here going, how is God going to redeem this situation? What in the world? He inaugurated the very first Passover. He parted the Red Sea. The Israelites could cross on dry ground. He bade the sea to crash back down, drowning every Egyptian's troops. Do we or do we not have proof God used this man? He threw a log into the water, curing it of its poison, directed the gathering of the miraculous bread from heaven, brought forth water from a rock, overpowered the Amalekites by the outstretching of his hands, oversaw the construction of the Ark of the Covenant, and finally, he delivered the Ten Commandments written by the finger of God. But here's the greatest part. It's not even about Moses. Pay attention in Exodus 3, 7 and 8. Then the Lord said, I have surely seen the affliction of my people who are in Egypt. I've heard their cry because of their slave drivers. I know their sufferings. And listen to this, folks. I have come down to deliver them out of the hand of the Egyptians. So listen, when you're sitting there going, this is great, this works for Moses. No, honey, this works for you. This is the same power, the same God who worked through Moses, and he's waiting for you. All he needs is your yes, because God only needs one voice to enact an entire great awakening, and it could be yours.
So as we're sitting here talking about all of the ways that Moses was used in these incredible ways, and it was never about Moses. Mm-hmm. It was about, as Donna just said, him just giving God his yes.
Yeah.
And then God stepping in and doing all this incredible stuff. I'm wondering if there are viewers at home, maybe in the audience as well, right now watching this panel and thinking, you know, that really sounds an awful lot like me. Mm-hmm. And we talked about this last week. I've gone to church. There's something on my heart. Nita, I want to be in the pastures with the ponies. What does God do with this? Right now, I'm a pastor's wife in Gresham, Oregon, 25 years ago. Like, how does he square all of these random callings? And they're not random, are they?
Right.
A lot of what we desire in our hearts, if we're giving our lives to God, should be the premise, and not a carnal desire, but a desire to serve, is put there on purpose.
Right.
And then we allow, maybe unintentionally, we allow men to try to define for us what they think that gift should look like. Right. Hey, I have an interest in music. Well, then you're going to be the new guitar player on the worship team. But maybe you're meant to sit back and write lyrics. It's not that it's evil to try to see what a person's gifting is and try to help coach them along. I'm not saying that. But I'm saying at the end of the day, it has to be God that casts the final vote. And we're not always going to see our calling in real time.
Right.
I cannot tell you how many times in our lives, I'm just sharing collectively from the panel, we have to go through a season of just obedience.
Yep.
Yeah, that's
there
right.
is no immediate reward. Right. There's no immediate recognizing in the spot that you're stuck in what the value of it is.
Burning bush. We don't always
get
that burning bush that tells us exactly what we need to
right.
do.
Right.
It's just being obedient. And then sometimes looking back and say, Lord, I just walked through 6 years of faith. I get why I learned those lessons, because now I get what I'm doing as I move forward, and all of those things that I've amassed. Doesn't Misfits deal with this?
It does. And the thing is, with very little time, what we have to remember is that if we could jump to our end game calling, what I call the end game calling, which is the final destination of where we really thrive in ministry, which, by the way, isn't always in the church. Sometimes it's in the community, it's in our families, it can be in different places. But if we knew where that was going, we'd just go there.
Right.
But it's those weird little moments of obedience and seasons of working our rear ends off, sometimes very thanklessly.
Right.
Those are the moments we're being tempered and taught and seasoned to do what the thing is at the end. Yeah. And one thing I will say is it's through the fact that Moses was a misfit, that he was put in this unique place to be a deliverer. It's through our hardships that we become a more compassionate witness. It's because of our failures that God can then be glorified in our successes.
Okay.
Everything that you think disqualifies you is what uniquely qualifies you.
Yeah. Amen. Unfortunately, it's that time of the day where we're out of time. But next week, we're going to continue this discussion on the new book, Misfits. And in-house, we're going to have a couple of very special misfits that are going to talk about their calling and what the Lord has done in their lives. So for everybody on panel, everybody here in studio, I'm Joe Horn. Keep your eyes on the prize, which is Jesus Christ. We'll be back.